Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everybody here. A little housekeeping. I left Herman Cain off the list of famous people who had come down with the coronavirus last week. I apologize. Also, Chris Christie is out of the hospital. As bad a shape as that guy is in, that's got to give everybody some hope. We got all these old fat guys recovering from the virus, indicating that the virus is growing weaker, which is good news. But good news travels slow. The virus grows weaker, our drugs, our therapies grow stronger, yet the fervent fear of the majority rises and rises and rises every week. You know, I'm seriously concerned that this fear is going to be whipped up into a frenzy once the flu season starts in earnest next month-ish. I mean, what is to stop us as a collective nation, as a people, as a global community, I suppose? What's to stop us from sinking deeper and deeper into fear of illness and death once we start finding out just how many things can kill so very many of us every year? What's to stop that? Only the media. Only the media can stop that. And maybe not even then. Maybe not. The media might not be able to stop this anymore because now there's social media and people are scaring each other. Anyway, I didn't even want to talk about this. I wanted to start with the insurrection. In fact, I'm going to set aside all this coronavirus insanity. Except I just want to point out what makes me understand that the religious fervor for the masks, which is the badge of the fear. It's not that I'm not saying if you wear the mask, you're afraid. I'm saying we are all wearing the masks because they want the weaker-minded amongst us to stay afraid. That's why we're all wearing the mask. And now, all the grocery stores and just about every store you go into, they have a designated mask enforcer to force you to put on the mask before you can go through the store or as you leave the store. I got to the checkout counter. I made it through the entire shopping experience with my children. And the mask enforcer catches me at the end. I'm in the checkout line. He says, I'm going to have to ask you to leave the store. I said, okay, I'll leave. And then I went to check out. He said, I'm not going to allow you to check out, sir. He said, your daughters can check out. Why? Because my daughters were wearing rubber gag plague masks. They're a joke. They were wearing joke masks. They were allowed to check out. I was asked to leave the store. And I had some interesting words with the fellow. I asked him, I said, you understand this is delusional. Do you understand that the masks they're wearing don't protect them or anyone else from anything? Do you understand that? I'm just following the rules, sir. I said, yes, that's how they ended up shoveling Jews into the oven. I'm just following the rules. Vacant look in his eyes. I should have said Nazi Germany. I probably would have given him a World War II lesson for him to have understood that comment. All right, was I not going to talk about this? Why am I talking about this? All right. We go into the insurrection file. And here's the headline from CNN. The headline on CNN.com says, Eskimo Pie is getting rid of its derogatory name. So that's an editorial comment right there in the headline. And CNN's supposed to be a non-biased source of news and facts. Okay, so they've already implied that the name Eskimo is derogatory. Well, anyway, they've decided on a new name over there at the manufacturer. They're going to call it Eddie's Pie. Joseph Eddie was one of the founders of the company, so they're going to call it Eddie Pie. The name Eskimo, let's see here. I think this is CNN saying this. The name Eskimo has long been used by non-native groups to refer collectively to Inuit and Yupik people. That's according to Alaska Native Language Center at the University of Alaska. They say that this name is considered derogatory because it was given by non-Inuit people and it was said to mean eater of raw meat. Okay, is that derogatory? The reason some people probably called Inuits and what are the other ones? I didn't even know there was another one. Inuits and Yupiks. The reason they called them that was probably some other Indian group saw them eating raw meat, and that was the name they gave them, and that's somehow the name the Europeans picked up, and now that's derogatory. Whatever. We have an announcement from the manufacturer. They say, "We as ice cream manufacturers are committed to being a part of the solution on racial equality. We recognize the Eskimo term is derogatory." Unquote. Nobody else recognized that it was derogatory until the statue started coming down and the insurrection started. Now they've buckled under just like Uncle Ben's. They couldn't outlast the millennials with a 30-second attention span. Anyway, the real danger here is the buckling to the Marxist insurrection. It's not so much the changing of the name, or I don't even want to argue whether Eskimo is derogatory. I never considered it derogatory. I thought it was like if somebody called me Irish or Scots Irish. I don't know. Maybe they meant it in a derogatory. I never took it derogatory. Whatever. That's the real danger. I mean, we got a whole other like it's like a Yankee. So here's the thing. You can outlast these people. You can even turn and do like a jiu-jitsu move on these people. Like, you know, the British, they called us Yankees. And so we ended up taking that on as a badge of honor. Yes, we're Yankees, and now we're going to defeat you in a war, and we're going to win our independence. How about that? You know, and for all of you rednecks out there, we know what you've done with the word redneck. We thought we were making fun of you, and now you've created an entire redneck culture. There's a redneck navy. Oh, no. It's not redneck navy. What is it down there in Louisiana? A coon? No, I can't say that on the air. I forget. Anyway, the cheeseheads up in Wisconsin, do you think they take the term cheesehead and they want that eliminated because it hurts their feelings? What about all the folks from Oklahoma? Okies. Do they quiver and cringe and cry when you call them an Okie? What about the Californicators? I don't even know where to go with this anymore. They're the people who move out of California and destroy other states. And that is a derogatory, but they deserve it. All right. So Eskimo Pie bends the knee to the Marxist insurrection.
They escape. Why they deserve it?
No, but they take their liberal trash to other states, and then they'll turn Texas into California,
but
politically.
The people who stayed are the one the problem, aren't they?
The people who stayed in California are the problem?
I mean, aren't they the one?
Well, they're the originators of the problem, but then people get sick of California, they leave California, and then import their politics into the states like they're doing to Idaho right now. Idaho and Montana are being turned into liberal cesspools by people from California who said they left California because of the high taxes. Anyway, greedy liberals. Leave California, import their liberalism. And anyway, so there. We will not be buying any more Eskimo pies here at the McBurney compound, although they were never really that popular here. I was never a big fan of the Eskimo pie. I thought that was a bit... They were just trying too hard. I mean, you got cake, you got cookie, you got ice cream and chocolate. I mean, make up your mind for crying out loud. All right, meanwhile, from the ironic insurrection file, that's right, sometimes an insurrection can be ironic. Let's see. Sarah Iannarone. That's Sarah Iannarone. She is a self-described Antifa follower, and she is running against Ted Wheeler for mayor of Portland. So a straight-up Antifa street marauder is running against the mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler, and a poll conducted last week shows the Antifa marauder leading Ted Wheeler, a bedwetter, 41% to 30%. So the Antifa tough tattooed chick is beating slope-shouldered bedwetter Ted Wheeler. She's up 41 to 30. The remaining 29% is split. Or maybe they're just wasted or strung out or they're just out of it. I mean, it's Portland. Maybe they're just plan on shopping for more plaid shirts and corduroy on election day, dude, you know, and just let it ride. So the other 29%, we don't know what's going on. Let's see here. Wheeler has faced criticism from the left for his handling of protests and policing. And criticism from the right as well, by the way. So, anyway, so both the normals and the insurrectionists hate Ted Wheeler. So he's really set himself up for quite the politically spectacular collapse, has Ted. He's tried to make nice with the insurrectionists, and now they're going to cut off his head, so to speak, at least. Possibly defeat him in the election. Ted Wheeler's odds, by the way, of winning the mayor's race are still at least as good as Sarah Iannarone's odds of overdosing before Election Day. So he's got that going for him, okay? All right. Anyway. Back. Stay with the insurrection here. Oh, so back. Another one. This is another story from the ironic insurrection file, or you could put this in the poetic justice file. Could go appropriately in either one of those files. Last year, Delaware Governor John Carney pardoned Barry Gordon Croft Jr. He's possession of a firearm during commission of a felony, assault, burglary. He's got a long rap sheet going all the way back into the mid-1990s, does Barry Gordon Croft. Well, last year, the governor of Delaware pardoned him. And then last week, he was arrested for conspiring to kidnap and murder Governor Gretchen Whitmer out there in, is it Minneapolis? Is it Minnesota? Is it Wisconsin? I can't remember what Whitmer's. Michigan. Michigan. She's the governor of Michigan. Yeah. Uh-huh. So I find it ironic that a liberal leftist governor Delaware pardons one of the conspirators who is going to kidnap and sure. Now listen to this, folks. This is great. It's from the widespread deception file. I downloaded this from informationliberation.com. Tuesday, October 7th, 2020. Chris Menahan of Information Liberation wrote an article titled, quote, "Remember how the FBI conveniently arrested a Trump superfan for sending mail bombs right before the midterms? Do you folks remember that? That was in 2018, and all these non-functioning bombs were mailed. Do you guys remember that? And a lot of us were kind of suspicious that maybe the bomber was maybe worked for the campaign of whoever it was who ran against, Hillary Clinton. Anyway, it just all seemed to be, and it was all timed right before the midterms, and yeah, we thought maybe he worked for the DNC. Anyway, we had our suspicions. He wrote in that article, what are the odds we'll see a similar event right before the November election? And then, shazam, Thursday, October 9th, the FBI announced they allegedly busted a plot by Michigan militia to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer because of her lockdown measures. Notice they call it Michigan militia. You know why? That implies that it's right wing. And then they move right on and they don't really describe. Anyway, so let's see. Chris Menahan, a very prescient writer who predicted that there would be a sham October surprise. He says, let's see. No, this is a filing in the U.S. District Court. Says in early 2020, the FBI became aware through social media that individuals were discussing the violent overthrow of certain government and law enforcement components. How did they know this? Well, the FBI had undercover agents and confidential informants working with the group. The Michigan Supreme Court, by the way, I'll remind you, ruled that Whitmer's lockdown orders are unconstitutional. So Whitmer's already been slapped down by the court, but the big media, the Democrat Party, and elements within our own justice system and the FBI, hell-bent on getting rid of Donald Trump, were willing to carry forward the story of a bunch of knuckleheads talking about doing a bunch of stuff that they could probably never pull off on social media, and they turn it into a militia plot, a right-wing militia plot. They all had MAGA hats, and they were going to get her. Anyway, Menahan says that the FBI could have busted these guys, that their agents may or may not have entrapped, I'll say. They could have arrested them in June or July, but they chose to wait. Consider this FBI director Christopher Wray's revenge. Folks, this was all a show. And the reason I know that is because people who actually intend to carry out actual criminal acts of this import, they don't talk about it on social media. They don't write any of it down. They meet, they talk, and they conspire. This was all for show, and I don't think any of us bought it, frankly. I mean, did you buy it? I didn't buy it. I don't even think the lefties bought it. That's why everybody wants a piece of the action. Everybody needs a main attraction. I got what everybody needs. Satisfaction guarantees. Everybody wants a piece of the my throat in between there during the break, but we're back, folks, and I don't want to talk about the coronavirus. I want to talk about the insurrection, folks. Not just the insurrection, let's talk about the election, although I'm not that interested in it, but the fact that the news media and the culture at large is allowing the campaign of Joe Biden to be passed off on America as if it's real is a clear indication that we have crossed some Rubicon from whence we may never return. Things are different when bald-faced lies like Joe Biden could be the president of the United States, like Joe Biden has enough higher mental function that he could run one of the most sophisticated governments on the planet. I mean, the guy's out of it. And his running mate is a naked Marxist, a nakedly ambitious Marxist. And the fact that this can be passed off on at least a significant plurality of the population, well, it just tells me that we're somewhere that we've never been before. That's all. And it's uncomfortable for me. Okay? It's uncomfortable for me. And while this is all happening, folks, pulled this story down off of WorldNet Daily out of the war file. China has been sending fighter aircraft into Taiwan's airspace while the ruling Communist Party is issuing threats. Let's see. Oh, we have some of the threats right here from the Chinese. Quote, the U.S. and Taiwan must not misjudge this situation or believe the exercise is a bluff. Should they continue to make a provocation, a war will inevitably break out. Unquote. That's from the Communist Party Global Times newspaper. We have a quote here now from Gordon Chang, the author of The Coming Collapse of China, from your lips to God's ears, Mr. Chang. And he says China's in rehearsal to take over Taiwan. Yeah, I think he's right. I think they're going to do it. Right in broad daylight in front of God and everybody, they are going to at least try to take over Taiwan militarily. And I think sooner rather than later. Hu Jijin, the editor of the Global Times, the Communist Party rag, has written that China is morally justified to war against the Taiwan, unquote. China analyst Richard Fisher, writing in the Taipei Times, says that Hu is not just urging China to commence war to murder millions of Taiwanese. He wants China to be able to kill millions of Americans as well. Who? What is this, an Abbott and Costello routine? Who is urging China? No, what? Third base. I'm sorry, that's Hu Jijin. In fact, I have to use Hu's whole name throughout the rest of this story so we don't slide into an Abbott and Costello routine. That would be embarrassing. I'm sorry, an Abbott and Costello routine. Let's see. Richard Fisher, China analyst, goes on to say Beijing may just not yet have the overall ability to invade Taiwan, but they can run exercises to terrorize Taiwan and frighten America, who they now know is obviously easily frightened. Very, very precarious when your enemy knows that you are easy to scare. And that they had something to do with the thing that exposed the fact that you're easily scared. These are very precarious times. Let's see, Gordon Chang, author, went on to say that Chinese leaders are now risking an incident that could justify taking of lives. In May, in a surprise attack, China seized Indian territory in the Himalayas. You remember all that, folks? I remember. Well, fortunately, since that time, since late August, India has recovered the lost ground that China took and in the process have humiliated the Chinese military, who have proven incapable of counterattacking Indian forces. Well, that's a good sign. Chang tells us that after this India episode, Xi Jinping looks exposed politically. Since 2012, Xi Jinping has accumulated almost unprecedented power, Mr. Chang reminds us. And he says there is, inconveniently for him, no one else to blame for debacles like what just happened in India. So Xi Jinping is walking a fine line, according to Gordon Chang, author of The Coming Collapse of China. He says Xi therefore knows that should he fail, he could lose everything. Power, freedom, assets, even his life. Yeah. Well, let's hope for all that. Anyway, I had this dark premonition. As I was reading this article, I was looking out my window at the world, and I had this dark premonition. And I thought to myself, forget the relatively benign masks that they're making you wear that you obsess over all the time and get into arguments about and feel so uncomfortable about. Forget about all that. If China invades Taiwan, if China invades America, I mean, that truly is the end of normal. Then there will be no return to normal. And we're in a very precarious position right now. A very, very precarious position. And our enemy, Xi Jinping, he's in a precarious position himself, and that's a dangerous place for the world to be. But let's return to the insurrection file, where now it's up in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, where someone shot at a cop. The cop shot that person, and now we're rioting over police brutality again. Officer Joseph Mansa shot 17-year-old Alvin Cole outside a Mayfair mall on February 2nd after the teen fired a stolen gun. February 2nd? February? What month am I in? Is this a time warp? Is it October? So this happened in February. So this is what the officer who shot the kid, the 17-year-old punk, was not charged after it was ruled he had an actual subjective belief that deadly force was necessary. The police officer was black, for whatever that's worth. It doesn't really matter to me. And this is in Milwaukee County. So now videos come out showing dozens of people run. I'm sorry, a dozen people running up to homes in the subdivisions in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, breaking glass, repeatedly hurling heavy objects through windows of people's houses. In one video, you can overhear someone saying, "Hey, do you have any idea how many Democrats, how many school teachers, how many union members, how many people that support you live on this street?" Unquote. So you can hear that in the background of the video, and that's telling, isn't it? That people intuitively know that Democrats, public school teachers, and union members support the riots. People know that intuitively, and they're warning them, "Hey, you're throwing rocks at your own people." It's just... Other footage shows mobs whooping in celebration as they smash businesses' windows. A group is also seen calmly looting a gas station and then leaving when someone says, "Hey, the police are coming." Well, how long will it be before we won't be able to say that in the middle of a looting? Anyway, this all took place in Milwaukee County. And so this is why I'm always confusing Milwaukee and Minneapolis, by the way. I don't have anything against Milwaukee, and I don't have anything against Minneapolis per se. But all during these whole riots, I keep inserting Milwaukee instead of Minneapolis. And it's not because I'm racist against white people who like cheese. That's not it. It's just that the two cities, they both begin with an M. They both have a lot of syllables. They're both like Indian words, and they're both cold, and I don't know. I confuse them when it comes to the insurrection, but all I had to do was wait. All I had to do was wait because Milwaukee eventually was going to catch up to Minneapolis in the insurrection, right? That's all you have to do with these punks and these insurrectionists. I mean, what I want to do is I want to call on law enforcement and the duly, I don't want to say elected because I don't really believe in democracy, but the governing officials there, what I do want to do is call on them to start shooting rioters and killing them before civilians in America decide that they have to do it themselves. Because once we cross that Rubicon, I mean, that it's hard to put that toothpaste back in the tube. It's very difficult. But we are going, the average civilian American, especially people who are veterans, people who have either marched under the flag or marched into fire, eventually they are going to put these riots down. And justifiably, by the way, if the government continues to abandon their responsibility to stop this, eventually it does become the right of the people to defend their lives and their property, and not only their lives and their property, the lives of their neighbors and the property of their neighbors. It becomes our obligation. So, forget waiting out. I mean, it's kind of amusing that my tendency to insert Milwaukee for Minneapolis when I was talking about the riots turns out to be merely just an anachronistic error.
Somewhere on a distant street, you're coming.
the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. That's right. What we need is one mayor, one governor willing to sacrifice his political career to stop this. Because killing a rioter could very well cost you your political career in this environment. But we need someone with something to lose, to willing to risk losing it in order to stop this. All right. Let's go now to the personhood file, where police in Baltimore heard gunshots just after 10:30 a.m. That's 10:30 in the morning, for those of you who matriculated in the government schools. An officer ran to the area, and the suspect was able to flee after a chase. Now, the officer returned to the location where he found a 51-year-old male bus driver suffering from gunshot wounds. The driver was later pronounced dead at the scene. The bus driver was identified as Marcus Parks Sr. Why was Marcus Parks Sr., a 51-year-old bus driver, shot to death in broad daylight at 10:30 in the morning? Well, it's because of child killing. It's because of legalized child killing. You see, what happened was the victim and the suspect got into an argument. See, everyone had gotten off the bus, and apparently the bus was going off duty. Well, the suspect tried to get onto the bus, and the driver told him that no more passengers are allowed on the bus at this time. This led to an argument. The suspect grabbed the driver's bag. The driver chased him, and the suspect shot the bus driver to death. A witness says he saw the shooter standing over the top of the bus driver when he pulled the trigger. So how does this have to do with child killing? Well, we've created a culture by which an argument leads to an attempted robbery, which in the past would have led to possibly a fight or just a guy running away. But now, killing the guy is also an option that you may choose because the guy might be able to identify you. And so this particular robber, strong-arm robber, what it looks like, decided to shoot and kill the bus driver because that's what he's been taught by the culture at large since he was a child, was that murder, killing an innocent person, is an option that you may choose, which is why we need to stop all that. We need to stop all that. And I will continue to do my part to work on that, and I hope you will too. At least just don't participate in your own life. If someone comes to you and asks for advice about an unwanted pregnancy, you know, you could just tell them, well, don't kill the baby. You could help somebody if they need help to stop them from doing that. Anyway, do what you can in your own way. All right. We'll go now to the Dim New World file, where YouTube and Vimeo have removed video posted. This is unbelievable. I had to stop I had to gather my thoughts. Video was posted to YouTube and Vimeo that captures moments in the delivery room at Riverside Methodist Hospital, Columbus, Ohio, where Mother Amanda Finifrock, the mother, said no hospital staff came as her first son, Emery, landed on the edge of the bed. He received no treatment and lived for 45 minutes, and then he died. Her second son, Elliot, breathed and cried on his own for 2.5 hours, left to die by the hospital staff at Riverside Methodist Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. Finifrock told the Federalist that a neonatologist at the hospital said, quote, it's inhumane to try, unquote, to save her babies. What? Yeah. YouTube removed the video and told the group Created Equal, who posted it, that it violated community standards. YouTube has not specified which standards, but we all know it's their pro-abort standards. The executives and the vast majority of people who work for YouTube are pro-abort child murderers. They support the killing of innocent children. They have participated in the killing of innocent children. And they will not have the truth about killing innocent children to be told. They also went ahead and disabled Created Equal's account. Created Equal, by the way, is a anti-abortion group. An abolitionist group, if I'm not mistaken. Although I may be, but they are. They may be abolitionists. I'll have to find out. Anyway, they disabled their account, stating the reason is you cannot upload videos that are hateful, defamatory, or discriminatory. Now, there's no doubt that what you see in that video, when adult medical professionals leave two innocent children to die, that is hateful. That is hateful. Anyway, the Department of Health and Human Services say their Office of Civil Rights will investigate Finifrock's case. Civil rights? Civil rights? Okay. Anyway, the censored video is still available on Facebook and Parler, and I will link to it so that it's not watchable, frankly. It's not, you can't get through, it's awful. Meanwhile, from the Decline and Fall file, doctors at North Texas Children's Hospital say they've seen an alarming rise in juvenile suicide attempts. One doctor there, a medical director of psychiatry, says the increase has amounted to roughly one new patient per day in August, the last month for which full reporting. A teenage suicide attempt a day. I'm sorry, juvenile. The hospital admitted 29 children in August following attempted suicides. And it has admitted almost 200 attempted juvenile suicides this year, more than double 5 years ago. Doctors believe the delayed return to normal life and school has contributed to the hopelessness that children are expressing when they are admitted. Okay, so this is a doubling in juvenile suicides over 5 years. So does the lockdowns and all that have something to do with it? Yes, probably has something to do with it. But that's not the main thing. That's just the latest exacerbating factor. But add to the hopelessness, add to that godlessness. Add to that a culture that has taught the children that killing is an option when you're seeking a solution for the problem. And a sad and desperate and depressed juvenile might just think about killing themselves. And apparently they are at a rate that's, that's off the charts in my opinion. That's a public health crisis. I mean, forget a virus that's obviously becoming less and less deadly. Forget that. Let's move on. What about this? What about so many other things that we could occupy our time with that could actually improve civilization and improve the hearts and souls of men rather than just promulgating fear and arguing over over an election that's relatively meaningless to any of us. I mean, does who the president is matter when your juvenile child is considering suicide? Does that matter at all who's the president? Meanwhile, into the justice file, Citrus County, Florida, the sheriff's office responded to reports of a violent clashes outside of a convenience store last Sunday. Deputies heard gunshots. Multiple fights broke out amongst a crowd of 60 to 80 people as deputies tried to take control of the situation. Deputies discovered multiple gunshot holes in a truck, but the person inside the vehicle was not injured. Witnesses at the scene refused to cooperate because why? Well, you're allowed. In fact, you can just get right up in a police officer's face and curse his mother. So they people refused to cooperate. Detectives finally identified the suspect as 32-year-old Damare Barnes. Believe it or not, Barnes has a lengthy criminal history. Oh, Barnes is the one who shot up the truck, by the way, trying to kill the person inside. Allegedly. Barnes has a lengthy criminal record, including 9 felony convictions. He had just been released from prison on October 1st. This was last Sunday, for crying out loud. 5 days he's out of prison. He's in custody right now, but we don't know for how long. How do we know? Well, in part because despite being sentenced in 2016 and serving 4 years in a correctional institute, he was released anyway. He may be out already. After all, it was only attempted murder. We need to find out if the district attorney there in Citrus County is one of Soros's boys. We'll know. All right. More from the justice file. A grand jury in Tyler County, Texas, has charged Netflix for promoting lewd exhibition with their film last month that I won't mention the name of it ever again. But you all know the name of it. They've been charged in Tyler County, Texas, for promoting materials which depict lewd exhibition of a child younger than 18 years old, which appeals to prurient interests. It's an awful lot of words for the charge, but basically, they're promoting, I don't even want to say it, right? It's so disgusting that these things can even be spoken of in broad daylight. These are the things that should only be discussed in dark rooms in courthouses where you've caught the creeps. You caught the creeps, you got them cornered, they're on trial. That's when you talk about stuff like this. It's child pornography. Shouldn't even be uttered in the light of day. Anyway, this is from CBS in Austin. Ted Cruz has urged the Department of Justice to investigate. Yeah, we'll see about that. We here at the Worldview, we've called for the immediate arrest on the grounds of probable cause of a felony against a child or children. That these people should be arrested who produced this movie. Anyone who downloaded the thing should be arrested. Crying out loud. Meanwhile, over in Pakistan, they've banned, they've given a final warning to TikTok over obscene and immoral content on the platform. According to a statement from Pakistani officials, complaints were received from different segments of society against immoral, obscene, and vulgar content on social media, particularly TikTok. And so Pakistan is saying, hey, TikTok, if you can't keep the filth off your platform, we're just going to shut it down, which is exactly what should be done, by the way. But digital rights groups, they say there's no legal basis for video games. For a video game to be censored or a platform like this to be censored. And censorship is opposed by the science and technology minister. He says banning culture like this will kill the tech industry. We cannot afford such bans. If we ban the pornography, we will lose a lot of money, you see. We will fall behind in the tech area. So for the money, we will have the pornography for the children. That's because we needed the money, you see. And after all we have to do is sacrifice our children, and we will make lots of money.
Heaven.
It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's segment number four, which this may be the last segment. It may not. I don't know. Got to give you an update on the community spread here at the McBurney compound. The virus continues to ravage its way through the chicken community. Some of the little chicks have got it now, too. It's sad, too. And then the half-blind mama chicken, she's fully... She got her eyesight back fully now. That's a dancing happy chicken. And she's raising a chick who she doesn't even realize isn't hers because she was blind at the time. And that's all very interesting. But we do have another blind mama chicken. The festering boils have closed her eyes, and so now she's living in close quarters with the bird whisperer. And the formerly blind chicken and the chicks. It's all very interesting social construct that has evolved, actually, through natural selection, oddly enough. All right. And we have declared war on the ground squirrels here at the McBurney compound. We've taken 3 scalps so far. And if all of this destruction that's been occurring, by the way, they're cute. Boy, they are cute as all get out and fuzzy and cuddly and all that. But if all the destruction that has been occurring on the compound is at the hands of 3 squirrels, these are some of the most destructive animals on the planet.
I just saw one.
Oh, you saw another one. Okay, so it's more than 3. All right, well, I'm still on the war path, so we'll see how that all works out. Bloodshed in Denver due to the insurrection. I'm not sure what happened in Denver, but apparently someone looked... a police officer... I'm guessing a police officer arrested a person of color, or maybe shot a person of color back months ago, and so I don't even know all the details. I just saw this. But there's bloodshed in Denver. I don't know enough about it. But I can tell you this, folks. When people are allowed to line up, protesters and counter-protesters, and either side is allowed to actually present themselves in public with body armor, with weapons, I'm sorry, that should not be allowed. And that should be stopped by all means necessary. Because that means either one side or both sides, I don't know enough about this yet, but people showed up ready to fight. I mean, with helmets on and face shields and sticks and clubs and shields. I mean, what is this? That can't even be allowed to start. Yet they let it go until somebody got shot and killed. In Denver. And so the Broncos and the Patriots game has been postponed. Oh, I forgot. It has nothing to do with that. The violent bloodshed in the streets, that would never affect a Broncos-Patriots game. Because if I'm not mistaken, that game was going to be in New England, although I haven't paid attention to the Broncos. They've been dead to me since 2012. Dead to me. No, the Broncos and Patriots... Their game's been postponed indefinitely because of one person testing positive for the coronavirus. And so management on both teams collectively wet their pants and canceled everything. Why? Because we've been conditioned to be terrified. This is very precarious. Don't think that our enemies are not watching how we are behaving. We're behaving like terrified children. And I think it might be because... Most of our governing officials and leading cultural influencers are terrified, hysterical children. They're godless and they're afraid. And that's the type of person that loses an empire. And what makes this, how do I know this is different than other past crises? How do I know this is different and possibly terminal for America? Is that the rank immorality, the in-your-face rebellion against God and our traditional American everything good, it doesn't stop. It's intensifying. Normally, when bad things happen, we stop with the weird sex-oriented, you know, everybody just gets down to what's real. But that's not happening. In fact, listen to this. From the Different Kind of Crisis file... Breitbart reports that a new exhibition at the Smithsonian Institute is about to open. Is it European art, you might ask? Maybe. Mid-century architecture? Possibly. Epidemics throughout history. Maybe a lesson on epidemics. That would be timely. No. The new exhibition opening at the Smithsonian is called Girlhood. It's complicated. Do I even have to go any further? I'll just give you some of the pullouts. Every day, girls change our culture's definition of girlhood. And included is I won't name this person, but it also describes a tranny who's biologically male. Goes on and on about how this tranny is involved somehow in girlhood. Always knew he was a girl trapped in a boy's body. As a toddler, he felt emotions, and his family listened and they supported and helped transition him into a girl. Exhibition also includes an exhibition on intersex, which I'll just not even go into that. I don't think that calls for any further. And then finally, a section on Planned Parenthood founder Margaret Sanger. Say what? Well, I guess she was a girl at one point. Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, who has killed millions of innocent children, legally and for money and for profit. Margaret Sanger is described as a writer and a nurse who advocated for girls to know and control their own bodies. Okay. So that continues amidst the scary pandemic. The pandemic. Yes. It continues. Listen to this. From the Queering of America file, a transgender man in New Jersey, which means a woman, a woman in New Jersey is suing Amazon for being denied a promotion after telling his boss he was pregnant. Wow, this gets confusing. So this is a transgender man, which means it's actually a woman, which means she might actually be pregnant. She went to one of her supervisors, and then word spread throughout the office. Imagine that. The tranny goes and says he's pregnant. And there's some snickering going on and some talk in the office. Imagine that. Shocking. And then she was soon harassed by other employees, including in the men's bathroom. Okay, we'll just... was then placed on leave, told to furnish a doctor's note for pregnancy-related accommodations. The tranny claims he provided the documentation but was denied an accommodation. And here's what the tranny has to say, quote, Amazon has a policy and practice of discriminating against individuals because of their disability or pregnancy. They're failing to provide employees with accommodations and retaliating against employees for requesting accommodations. Unquote. That was the transgendered man there claiming to be pregnant. No word on the due date. No word on the baby's sex, oddly enough, in this story. Normally, that's when a pregnancy, people ask, when are you due? Is it a boy or a girl? Now we ask the person, are you a boy or a girl? Forget the child. We don't know if the parent is a boy or a girl. And this continues in the midst of this terrifying pandemic that everyone's so scared about. That's why this is different, folks. The big flinch is different. We may not recover from the big flinch. All right. We go on now into the decline and fall file, where LifeSite News reports that Emmanuel Macron, Prime Minister of France, intends to outlaw homeschooling by 2021. He's also going to step up controls on private schools through inspections of their curricula. A recent law requires such schools to teach a common core. The common core will be defined by a high authority for education. Yes, Macron envisions a new school year, 2021, free of homeschooling. He's fighting what he calls separatism under the cloak of Islam. Yeah, he cites an example of a clandestine school, meaning one clandestine school, where young Muslims were being taught by women in niqabs and mostly learning prayers and the Quran. He's using that to justify his attack against freedom of education. The LifeSite News reports that the COVID-19 crisis has already accustomed many people to government interference with their comings and goings, wearing of masks, and generally feeling at fault whenever they step outside. Well, that's really deep right there, folks. What they just, this is a reporter for LifeSite News just stating something that is deep and meaningful, folks, that I never fully understood until I read this article. This idea of generally feeling at fault whenever you go outside. So every time I get ready to leave the house, I have this sense of, I don't know how to describe it, discomfort. And it's not just the mask. It's because when I go out there, I know that everybody's looking at me as if I'm infected, and they think I'm looking at them as if they're infected and they might infect me. A general feeling of fault whenever we step outside. That's what they've done to us. At least those of us who are willing to think and not just mindlessly decide to just shut it all off, but to actually observe what's happening and to recognize what's occurring. Folks, that is dangerous. And it's this feeling of fault, feeling at fault that the government has instilled into our psyches that is giving wicked evil people like Emmanuel Macron the power, or at least he believes he has the power, to force people to stop educating their children and hand them over to the government. Why does he believe that? Because we've all gone along with all this other garbage. And we're generally to feel at fault. Anyway, back to the article. This new infringement will seem small. Oh, I have to send my, I can't homeschool anymore. Okay, well, I mean, you've already destroyed my business. You've taken away my liberties. You made me cover my face in public. Okay, well. Yeah, this will seem like a small infringement to a large majority who have already handed over their rights to the state. Macron defends himself saying, school is the Republican melting pot. It is the heart of secularism. The heart of secularism, where we form consciences. So Emmanuel Macron is hell-bent on forming consciences in secularism. Again, dangerous. Dangerous. Very dangerous. He wants to raise kids without the knowledge of God, and he wants to do that on purpose. And that is a criminal act of child abuse for which he should be removed from office, amongst other things. Meanwhile, we go to the, what is this? The widespread delusion file, where a Pennsylvania pub owner, Kathy, asked a customer to follow the sign at the entrance mandating masks while not eating or drinking. Well, what did this person do? He ignored her and walked to a table and sat down where a mask is no longer required. Well, she didn't like that at all. Now, she says that... Now, I don't know if there are any other words between Kathy and this free American who probably just recognizes the idiocy of the idea of walking to a table and then taking off the mask. Maybe he just realizes that. Maybe he's not a moron. Maybe he's just rational. Well, anyway, what happened at the end? The diner wrote mask instead of a tip on the receipt. You know the line where you write in the tip? He wrote M-A-S-K. And there was no tip. Now, Kathy says, when we first started following Pennsylvania's mask protocol, there was initially a little bit of pushback, but that changed very quickly. Mm-hmm. That changed very quickly. So virtually everyone complies now, and everyone's a masked Nazi now. And so she published up on Facebook because, you know, she was very upset with this person acting like a rational, free human being. You're not allowed to do that anymore. It's offensive. And she says her posting of this incident up on Facebook, she says, it's definitely paying off for us now. Customers tell me, you're our go-to place. We feel comfortable here. We feel safe.
It's a pub.
It's a bar. get half schnockered and die in a car accident on the way home, but I felt safe because I had my mask. She says also, listen to this, quote, a lot of doctors have been calling saying, we support you. This is necessary. Doctors are calling her, telling her dirty, filthy masks at a bar are necessary. Somehow I doubt that. I wonder if she can produce transcripts or recordings of any of the dozens of doctors who've called her up to tell her how she's doing her part to stop the spread of the virus. Meanwhile, from the widespread panic file, the Centers for Disease Control has finally acknowledged that tiny particles that linger in the air spread the coronavirus. That's right. As I predicted long time ago, this virus is aerosol. Now, just a few weeks ago, according to the Wall Street Journal, the CDC acknowledged aerosol, but then they pulled it down, and nobody knew why. And everybody, they said, well, it was a draft. We're not sure. And they were sure. They've known the whole time. I mean, we've known since the 1950s. I mean, it's like I said, we all collectively decided to forget everything we've ever known, always, forever, all at once. We've known about aerosol transmission of viruses, especially cold viruses, which the coronavirus is a cold virus. We just decided to forget and freak out and panic and wet our pants. Flinch. All right, so it's aerosol. So what that should mean is the end of meaningless mitigation efforts. Yes, the social distancing, the masks, it should be the end of all that. We should now say, okay, we can't stop this. We need to make sure our health infrastructure is prepared. Hopefully this virus is losing its deadly effects, as these viruses tend to do, but let's get ready for this and let's face reality and let's get back to normal. We can't stop it. Let's stop all this silliness, but no. That's not what's happening. The religious fervor becomes stronger. The mask enforcer at the gate of the business of the grocery store becomes more fervent in their insistence that you obey. Meanwhile, from the widespread recovery file, and this happened even faster than I predicted. By the way, I'm one of the few people who had the guts to predict Donald Trump would recover and quickly. Why? Because I'm not an idiot. I've been watching the virus. I know what's happening. All of you people who are afraid to stand up and say this thing is not supposed to be ruling our lives anymore. Or I shouldn't say that. I'm going to say it. Those of you who are not willing to say we should stop obsessing over this and just cut it out. You are a net drag on human civilization. Donald Trump tweeted after recovering in a few days. I thought it might take a couple of weeks. Really? Yeah, I thought it might take a couple of weeks. He's 74 years old. He's a little overweight. He wasn't sick. But he didn't really look sick. Anyway, I thought he'd get sick and I thought he'd get better. I didn't realize it would happen in a few days. He tweeted, don't let it dominate your life. Yeah. Outkick, where I got this, it says his tweets reflect exactly what the data shows. Those in high-risk categories should be cautious. All other Americans should remain careful and considerate. And they say wear a mask, but I cross that out because you're an idiot if you think. And how do you be cautious? How do you be cautious against an airborne particle that could float through your...
Like a falling rock.
Yeah. It's like when you're driving down the highway in the mountains in Colorado and there's a sign that says falling rock and it shows a boulder bouncing off the highway. It's like, okay, I'm glad I'm ready. Let's take precautionary measures. Let's put on our masks. Okay. Just, you know what? Just don't live in fear. You could die. I could die. You know, we're going to die. All of us are going to die eventually, and I hope I don't get sick and die. I'd rather die suddenly, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, you should not live in fear. Alex Berenson, who we've quoted on the show 100 times. He's been a panic skeptic from the beginning as Alex Berenson. Berenson declared Trump's tweet as, quote, maybe the smartest comment Donald Trump has ever made. Just don't let it control your lives. That's all, right? Come on. All right. Now, we're almost out of time. Have I covered the Broncos and the Patriots? Oh, yes, I did. The violence, oh, that's fine. You know, we have bloodshed, broken windows, bricks, cops assaulted. But if one person gets a coronavirus, all the big, tough football players... No, I'm sure the players want to play. You know, because they're mostly morons and they can't do anything else. I shouldn't say that. I'm sure they're wonderful, fine people. I'm sorry. I was only talking about the Patriots side. Oh, the Broncos, too. Eh. We'll close with a couple things here. From the widespread panic file, Dr. David Nabarro from the WHO appealed to world leaders this yesterday, Saturday, to stop using lockdowns as your primary control method of the control virus, of the coronavirus. He says the only thing lockdowns achieved was poverty. Uh-huh. He made no mention of the potential lives saved, but he warned that we've probably doubled global poverty and a doubling of world poverty and child malnutrition into 2021. He warned that lockdowns make for poor people an awful... He said they make poor people an awful lot poorer. Yeah. Now, Mike Ryan, who's the emergencies director at the WHO, which is an interesting title, I direct emergencies. he was speaking at a briefing in Geneva the day after the WHO reported a record one-day increase in global coronaviruses. Over 330,000 cases in a 24-hour period led by surges in Europe. Ah! But listen to what this idiot has. And who cares if there's 400,000 new cases? Who cares? We can't stop it. I'm not going to say I don't care. I care if someone I know gets it and gets sick. I care if I get it and I get sick. But we can't obsess about it as a global community anymore, folks. Please. Here's what this idiot Mike Ryan says. What we want to try to avoid, and sometimes it's unavoidable, and we can accept that, but what we want to try to avoid are these massive lockdowns. But they are unavoidable sometimes, and we do accept them. No, they're not unavoidable. They're completely unavoidable, and we will not accept them. At least not in America, not anymore. We'll close with a common sense file, a letter entitled The Great Barrington Declaration. I thought they should have called this the Berenson Declaration. But it's basically 4,000 doctors and 40,000 other distinguished signatories demanding the, well, as epidemiologists, scientists, we have grave concerns about the damaging physical and mental health impacts of the prevailing COVID-19 policies. And we recommend an approach that we call focused protection. Those who are not vulnerable should immediately be allowed to resume life as normal. Cultural activities should resume. Restaurants and other businesses should open. People who are more at risk may participate if they wish. While society as a whole enjoys the protection conferred upon the vulnerable by those who have built up herd immunity. Keeping these measures in place, these COVID-19 policies we're under right now, keeping these measures in place until a vaccine is available will cause irreparable damage with the underprivileged disproportionately harmed. Just a few of the signatories. Martin Kudloff, professor of medicine at Harvard University, biostatistician, epidemiologist. Dr. Sunetra Gupta, Oxford epidemiologist. Jay Bhattacharya, professor at Stanford, public health expert epidemiologist. Folks, the common sense has finally cracked through, but who will hear it? Nobody. Nobody will listen. They'll just continue. It'll get worse and worse and worse and scarier. Folks, this is the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank you for joining us. I want to thank my friends at realscienceradio.com and at americanrighttolife.com. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.